And I think that for sure, I see a human tendency that is not, that the women's communities and the women's movement has not altogether dealt with, to shoot down any woman who forges ahead or steps out and becomes more public. I think questioning is real important. I think asking questions of any woman who would speak out as a representative or who is being looked at. I mean, even if we don't say we are spokeswomen for women's culture, we are, by virtue of the fact that we have exposure and people are asking us questions. It is absolutely essential that the women's communities watch what we're doing, because there's no way to know when any one of us may get winged out and start thinking we're speaking for someone we're not speaking for. And so it's real important for the women's communities to watch, you know. Don't blindly trust.
But to trust.
But do not assume that we will sell you out. Do not assume that as soon as the industry carrot is dangled, that we will give over everything that we have learned together and offer it up for the big contract. No way. I turned down contracts before I even understood what feminism was, and I turned them down because they wanted control over me. And I believe the same now. I will turn down any offer, regardless of where it comes from, if it means limiting me. And to have people say, "You're real messed up for limiting yourself to this women's music thing. If you just didn't label it, you could go a lot farther. It'd be a lot easier to merchandise you." That's my choice, and I'm doing it consciously, and I'm doing it for a purpose. I'm doing it for something beyond myself and also something to do with me. When the women's movement or any individual who defines herself as part of the women's movement or speaking from a concerned group in the women's movement says, "What you're doing over here is really messed up. You should limit yourself to this thing over here," I have the same response. Watch what I do. Listen to what I say in my music. If you have a question, speak to me clearly and speak to me to my face, and we'll talk about it. I'm not afraid. I am not an unconscious artist. No woman doing women's music who is calling herself a feminist, who is calling herself into women's music and supporting women's culture, is unconscious. She does know what she's doing, and she is responsible and can be questioned, and will have answers. They may not be what you want to hear, but there'll be answers.
What Prudy's Records is tape 4. What Prudy's Records is basically a project. It is putting together my music on tape and then on vinyl and getting it out. I don't, at this point in time, see it as anything beyond that. I don't have plans that extend beyond this project for Pleiades Records. I chose the name because it's a constellation, the Pleiades, also called the Seven Sisters. The myth of the Pleiades, I mean, there are a whole bunch of different stories, but the one that I like the best is that the Pleiades, who were all sisters, were walking down the road, and to tell the story in the vernacular, strolling down the road, and this Orion comes racing after them, trying to make them his, and they called upon Artemis, or Diana, goddess of the hunt, who was ranging around out in the forest, and she came tearing over and in order to protect them, transformed them into doves to give them safety in the sky. And then they again made another evolutionary transformation and became stars. And I thought it was a real beautiful idea to call the record company Pleiades, because I see the Pleiades as kind of symbolic of what women are doing now. The they're evolving and transforming from one thing to another thing.
What about the fact that they're in the constellation Taurus, the neck of the bull?
That has nothing to do with it at all. I have Taurus rising, but big deal. That was not in my mind at all. I was just sticking with the Pleiades. Plus, I think that the word is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
The E-I-E sound is real nice. Usually I hate the sound E. It can be very harsh, but in that word, I think it's beautiful.
Words are very important to you.
Very much so.
And you had that English background.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it in your music. You want to talk about, you know, how you use words?
Oh, sure. First, I want to finish this other part. At this point in time, Pleiades Records is not a collective. I envision it more as a coming together of women, all of whom that have their own life's work, which is totally apart from mine in the sense of what they do, not necessarily our goals, but one is a informations director of a college, and one is a community organizer around drug abuse, and one is a independent record producer and engineer. One is a sound woman who does sound at concerts. One is a lawyer. Another is a law student, soon to become a lawyer. Even some of the musicians don't do music for a full-time job. But just in terms of the staff or the organization of women in Pleiades, none of them work for Pleiades. We've all come together because we want to do this project, and each of them is basically taking a leave of absence from the rest of their work to come and do it and to work with me.
Where's the studio going to be?
The studio is going to be in San Francisco. That's where we're going to record the thing. And so that the person who will be coordinating the production, that will be her job. That's her sphere of influence. And that's her expertise. The woman that will be coordinating the business management and the legal consulting, all that kind of stuff, that's her expertise also. The woman that is going to be doing all the promotion and the advertising, setting all that stuff together, is also the information director at the college back east, and that gives her all that information, and the engineer. I mean, all the women will be basically doing the parts that they know to do, and they will be responsible for those parts. And I will be the person who finally says, yes, this is it, this is what I want, which is basically the idea of artist control, which I think we're all going for. You know, all the women that I know who are doing women's music are going for that in everything they do. And that's how I am, you know, approaching this project, and the staff is doing the same thing.
But at the end of the summer, basically everybody goes back to where they came from.
Yes, right. And we'll go on with their work then, whatever it is.
Is this record company going to be just for you, or do you see it growing into where there'll be other artists performing?
At this point, I don't. As I said before, Pleiades Records was created to produce my music and to get it out. I felt like and feel like it's now time. I've been doing my work and doing the things that were really important to do, and now it's time to focus in on getting my music out to all the people that want it. And then I don't know what will happen to Pleiades then. I don't have a real sense of it being another, you know, national recording company at this time. I don't see it that way at all. I mean, I haven't even gone into the studio for my own record yet. It's hard to think in the future at all.
What about albums in the future?
That really depends on what the sales are like, what the response in general is like. I expect that once the album is out, I will take a period of time to write before I go on the road to promote the album. Mm-hmm. It's real important to me that I continue to be identified as a songwriter as well as a performer. And I think that what happens when you don't write new songs is that either you get stuck singing the same old songs that you have written, and that gets boring for audiences, no matter how much they love you, or you have to sing other people's songs. And that's a whole other thing, because then you're into interpretation. You're not really doing the same thing as when you sing your own music. And I think that there are people, Meg Christian is a stunning interpreter of other people's music and writes her own music, but is not what she would consider a prolific writer. You know, she doesn't write a lot of songs, so she needs to sing other people's. And that's real important. And she does it real well. And she's responsible for getting other women's music out there as a result of her commitment to that. I see my reason to be as a songwriter. And so I'm always trying to be careful that I don't lose that in the rest of the stuff that I'm doing, whether it be organizing or performing, because that's why I'm doing everything else, you know, is because of the songs that I write. And I have to keep that in mind. I have to make sure I don't get off the track.
When you talk about going on the road, you mean nationally?
Yeah. Yeah. I will do a national tour probably in January. Set it up, start on the West Coast and do a concert in San Francisco and one in Los Angeles to kind of wave goodbye to my families and then go off and do it. And I've done that three times already. Oh, as much as I want. I mean, I'll be working with a lot of the same people I worked with before. One of the beautiful things that's happened in women's music in the past 3 years is that we have been able to set up production companies. So that when I go to Cleveland, I call up Oven Productions, you know. I don't call them up when I get to Cleveland. I call them up a couple of months in advance. Yeah, right. So do me. I deal with Oven Productions in Cleveland and Woman Soul Productions in Milwaukee, ASK Productions in Chicago, Artemis Productions, Boston. There's Tomato Productions in St. Louis. Macaroon Productions in Los Angeles. There are more. There are a lot more, and I just, they escape me. But there are a whole bunch of production companies that are run by women, for women's music and women's culture specifically, that I will work with. I will work with other individual independent producers, and we'll work with some colleges and universities and some clubs and just, you know, do it all. Do some closed concerts and some open concerts and try to reach as many people as possible.
You're going to be on the road for a while.
Oh, yeah. I would say probably a couple of months. Oh. You know, do that. Which is, I have done that already. I did that in the month of October and of last year, in the month of January and February last year. And it's something, I mean, we all do it. You know, Holly's on the road right now, Meg's on the road, Chris is on the road. And we take little stints, we kind of go out. I think Cassie Culver's going to be going on the road, or is on the road now. Kay Gardner's going on the road in the fall. I've been hearing rumors that some of the bands are going to go on the road. That's a whole nother thing because it's so expensive to move all that stuff. But we all, I think part of it is setting up a network so that there will be enough possibility of making money so that more than just a few people can go out and make their living doing it. It has not escaped any of our attentions that by and large the people who do women's music are soloists, white, middle class, and that's real limited, that's all. I think that among the women that I know, there is a real high consciousness about that fact and a real willingness to look beyond our own lives in terms of the things that we write about, and that's something that we have to sit with and learn about, I don't think that any of us have got that all down. But I know that we talk about it and we think about it and we're trying to do that. And also in terms of encouraging other women who aren't at this point identifying as being into women's music, you can't expect a working class woman or a lower class woman to quit her job and walk into something that can't pay her rent. And it's real groovy. You know, it's real groovy to be able to go to a concert in some way that the performers get $130 and everybody gets in for, you know, some small amount of money compared to how much it costs to put it on. That's not realistic if we're going to build a real viable economic alternative. I see what some of us are trying to do is to use the privilege that we have to set up these kinds of production companies. But in order to interest women who do not come from the kinds of privileged places that a lot of us do who are doing it now, you have to be able to offer them something more than a particular political line or the fact that it's done all with women. That may not matter as much at the beginning of those women's careers in women's music as making enough money to live the way they want to live does matter. And so, like, we have to think real seriously about ticket prices and talking about we want to keep the price low enough so that everybody will be able to go to see it. We also need to keep the prices high enough so that women beyond the privileged few can make it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we're in a circular thing where very few types of women are going to be able to afford to do it. And I think that if we're going to really talk about building a viable economic alternative in women's culture and specifically in women's music, the responsibility has to be looked at real carefully in terms of priorities of where the audience spends its money. If we ask $5 for a concert of four performers, first of all, in comparison to everything that's outrageous, it's real nice. It's a beautiful thing to be able to offer it for that. But there are only certain women who are going to be able to afford that all the way along in the production. Mm-hmm. Not only the musicians, but the sound woman, the lighting woman. I think that in talking about the tour, you know, there are only certain types of women who could afford to work on that tour.
And it even got to the point where there were certain types of women who could afford to go to it.
Yes.
I didn't realize that until I met several people who mm-hmm. couldn't afford that $5.
Mm-hmm. It was four.
It
was $4.
I paid $5 because my friend didn't give me a dollar back.
Uh-huh. Well, it was four.
Thank you for letting me know.
Part of what has to happen is that we have to talk to each other and educate each other enough so that it's understood it is going to cost. It is dear. The price will be dear. The price is dear for all of us right now. To build a culture is a real dear thing, I mean, in terms of being costly, psychically, on all the levels, you know, because we're fighting something that already exists that doesn't want to move over. But it's a question in my mind of priorities. Do you believe in it? And if you believe in it, and if you see it as something that we can win, you know, the struggle, then you put your money where the movement is. That's no joke. That's a jive statement. That's a cute statement. But it's not jive. It's serious. Otherwise, the only people who will be able to afford the whole thing are very privileged few, you know. Mm-hmm. It is not that we raise the prices only. It is that we think about setting up scholarships in terms of how to get the tickets to people who can't afford them. And that was something that we did Evan Paxton in producing some of her concerts in Los Angeles 2 years ago, came up with a subscription system. A way of women who could afford it to buy two tickets and leave one at the door for a woman who couldn't afford it. All those kinds of ideas. It is not to raise the prices in order to pay the women who deserve to be paid at the expense of an audience, some of whom can't go. It is to figure out ways so that we can redistribute the money that does exist. Some women could have afforded easily to pay $10 for that concert. Other women had to scramble to pay $4. Now, the audience has a responsibility to itself, mm-hmm. even as it has a responsibility to support its culture, the culture that it's making its heart energy off of. Just as the artists understand real clearly what their responsibility is in terms of not asking what they would get if they worked in the industry. You know? I mean, all of us have different fees depending on who we're working for. And we just don't ask the same kind of fees when we're working for the women's community because it's different and we're trying to build something. But there is a point of diminishing returns. The same is true, I think, with the audience and what they think of what they see based on what they pay. I mean, that's a reality. When women don't pay for what they see, not only women, when people don't pay for what they see, at a certain point, how they look at what it is they're getting is different.
Mm-hmm. It's a good point about, you know, putting the money into the movement.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because that's what people are asking us. Hey, you know, wow, looks like you made the big bucks tonight. What do you, you know, how are you recycling it into the movement? I would ask every woman that. Yeah. I think it's a good question, you know, and I can give my answers real easily. And I would expect to do the same, you know, with any woman.
I don't know if you remember the Bob Dylan concert that happened a couple of years ago when we went on tour for the first time after all those years. And the question of where his money was going to from that tour. And,
mm-hmm.
and at one point it was thought of to Israel. And his point was that he's sending it to build hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
The audience's point of view was that if they build hospitals with your money, they now have money to buy
yeah.
more arms.
Yeah.
And uh-huh. I think it's really important that
sure.
of who you're supporting, and that it should be known where the money is going to so that the audience can decide whether they want to support that or not. You know, like our arguments against Dylan were the fact that nobody really knew, it was just
mm-hmm.
rumors.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's where it is, be upfront about it and say.
Yeah, for sure. I think also that one of the things that we're going to have to deal with is the righteousness of an artist at getting money for the work she does, period. To have the things. If a woman works and works and works at whatever she does and makes money, how is it fair that another woman comes up and says, you shouldn't have this money? How is that fair? That's not fair in my mind.
And that happens to you a lot, I would
imagine. I think that happens to any woman who is making any money or appears to be making any money. They're challenged.
Yeah.
It is not challenged how much work do you do. The challenge is, what are you doing with the money you appear to be making from what we see you doing? And it's like, it's just education. It's just that we have to ask the questions we want answers to, not sit and discuss about, well, you know what I think? I think that she's really, we have to go straight to the source.
Mm-hmm.
That's all there is to it, you know?
But it comes to the point for the source to be available.
Oh, sure. That's for sure.
How are you dealing with it? The fact that you need privacy, but you're also, you know, you walk into the full moon and everybody knows who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You can start walking into places and they're going to go, that's Margie Adam.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with that?
I think that I don't go out as much. It's real difficult for me to always have to be operating under the assumption that people are not treating me as just a person.
Mm-hmm.
I forget.
Yeah.
See, I'm not in public a lot just because I'm, you know, going around doing stuff a lot. But when I am, I forget for a period of time when I walk into rooms what it is that's causing the stir. And when I realize it's me, it makes me very conscious that I'm not just me. I'm walking in as me, you know, right? Flesh and blood, or if I have cramps or I have a headache or I'm real high or I'm, you know, just eating a meal. That's my reality. And I've done that. I've been in that situation where I've gone someplace and just because I'm not thinking about it, I'll walk in someplace and either I will be approached by people who want to talk about something, will you do a benefit, will you do something, my business, come and approach me on business, or something will happen because I'm there that I'm not aware of at first, and then I realize that's what it is that's going on.
Should that have to be though? I mean, should you have to start thinking about who you are and who you are? I mean, there are two different sides of you.
I think that there's no way to get around that. I feel sad that insulation is what happens, that you want to insulate yourself from feeling uncomfortable, because I know that it's discomfort on everybody's part. Everyone feels a little uncomfortable. They're a little excited and they're a little uncomfortable. Well, I mean, I'm a little embarrassed and I'm a little uncomfortable. Well, no one wants to be like that. And I wish people would come and talk to me if they want to say something. The most discomfort that I ever have is I went into the Full Moon the other day just because I wanted to get a sandwich. And there were these people there, and I had this moment, but no one would talk to me, you know? And so I felt like it was a strange situation to be in, and I would have rather that they would have talked to me if they had something to say. If they didn't have anything to say, I don't want people to come up and talk just because whatever, but...
Does that become your responsibility then, though?
Oh, I don't think so.
To break that and...
I don't think. I'm walking up to people's tables? Hi, you may have heard of me. No. I struggle around trying to remember who I am, that I am me, that I am this person that loves to garden and has a wonderful time in her life and is trying to be clear and honest. That's me. You know, I write music and I play, and I'm good at what I do. This other part about what happens, because there's such a history about what performers are and how they keep themselves apart and how they think they're better and all that stuff, that's operating when I go places. And to break it down is like something that we have to do together. I have to be accessible. I have to be places. I have to not surround myself by people so that other people can't get to me that want to speak to me. If they want to speak to me, if I want to speak to somebody, I'll go speak to them. And I expect the same. The thing that comes between us is the distance that an assumption about who I might be based on the fact that I'm on stage, that's what comes between us.
And that's just from history.
I think so. And I think we both have to work, I say we meaning me and whoever else it is, we both have to work at not assuming that we're going to do that to each other, not assuming that when you walk up to me and say, I really like your music, I saw you, blah, 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 something, or if you have something to say to me, some information, not to assume that I'm going to go, oh, wow, that's really nice, and walk
thank
away.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't know what to say besides thank you. If it's, I loved your performance, thank you, that's appropriate. Someone comes up and says, I really couldn't relate to one of your songs, I really felt like it was classist because you said blah, 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 then I will talk. If I said, well, that's your opinion, walked away, that's not handling it in a real good way. But if a person feels that, feels anything, positive or negative, I think, and you want to say it, then say it.
I think that's one of the side effects, the nice side effects that's coming out of women's music.
I think so, too.
There is that two-way communication.
Mm-hmm. I think so. We have to learn. I think we're afraid. I get afraid that I'm not going to be seen as me. I don't want to be whatever the fantasy of the star is. I don't want that. That's the sick part that made me not want to ever do it in the first place. I never wanted to be a self-fulfilling prophecy of doom. You know, I didn't want to slaughter myself. And that's why I didn't want to perform. And I think that what I've learned is that there's at least a possibility with the support of women, of doing it differently, of seeing each other as equals and far out. You do music, I do photography, or I do children, or I do teaching, or I do whatever.
Yeah. I mean, there's an infinite number of ways to do things, and we limit ourselves so much into it's either this way or that way.
For sure. I think it's also women look at those of us who are up on stage, whether we're reading poetry or we're doing music or whatever, and say, "All that's better than what I do." And that's the whole thing about breaking down who's more important than who. You know, talking about the money thing and payment and how do we decide what a person's work is worth. How to communicate to audiences that the fact that I'm up on stage means I'm doing my work. And if you're doing whatever you're doing, then you're doing your work too. My work's not better than yours. You know, hopefully, I mean, especially in terms of women who are conscious and focusing in on working for social change from a feminist aspect or standpoint, that that's all equal. And all necessary.
I think it comes out too, because I'm just going to give an example. I'd never seen you perform. I hadn't even heard your music before February. And I was blown out. I mean, there was a real human quality about the people up on stage, which is so often not the case.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what started me thinking that this is important, what's happening here. And I wanted to find out more about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it has led into this show.
Yeah,
and that's one of the really nice things that happened. You know, when I said that was probably the best concert I've ever been to, aside from the sound problem there in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
it was because of that. I mean, I didn't feel that I'd paid $4 and was sitting down there. I mean, I really felt a part, and I'd come in a bad mood, and by the time I left, I was feeling good, really good. And then the story that was in either the Bay Guardian or Rolling Stone about Holly was walking down the aisle and tripped over that woman. Did you read that one? It was after the concert, but, you know, and the lights were off and everything. She was walking down the aisle and tripped over something. It turned out to be a woman sitting mm-hmm. on the aisle. And she said, "Are you all right?" And the woman said, "Yes, I've just never been affected like this before."
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was true. I got that from everybody. And I also like seeing the men there. I've only been to one woman's concert before, the closed concert.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Chris's in... I can't remember if it was December or January, and I liked that. I mean, it was something that I'd never been
mm-hmm.
a part of before. It was really an interesting experience, but I also liked seeing the men who knew what your music was and appreciated it for what it was and wanted to be a part of that experience.
Sure, yeah. Sure. I think it's real important for them to see it. And I'm interested to see the kinds of men who are coming.
Mm-hmm.
Real interested. I mean, the whole way the audience is changing, the kinds of people who are choosing to come as they know about it are real interesting.
It was quite a change for me, too, because I'd seen Chris perform years ago. I knew Lindy,
mm-hmm.
and it was, I can't remember if it was Chris's birthday or Lindy's birthday, but she was singing at the drinking board.
Uh-huh.
And, the difference from that time and then, you know, 2 months ago or a month ago in February was really
sure.
amazing. And it's been interesting to research back on that and what the growth has been.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's, I guess I said it before already, just that's one of the things that all of us, I think, are real conscious about, trying not to put distance between ourselves and the audience. Really making ourselves accessible and demystifying the whole process of performance so that what we're really trying to say can get through. You know, it's not just standing up there singing about strong women and yet not making that experience accessible to the audience because they're sitting there passively getting it. You know, we got to do it together. That's the message of the whole thing. We got to do it together. And if you have 10 models or 10 strong vocal public women doing it and no one else doing it, we're going to fail. We have to be able to transform and mirror and plug into all the energy that each one of us has and build on it. If we don't build on it, then as each of us burns out, there's not going to be anyone to replace us. Or as we need to take rest. I mean, I hope to God women's music grows and grows and grows and more women come and be a part of it, because there need to be more. They need to be supported. The press needs to cover them. The woman's press needs to be out there doing reviews of people who aren't, you know,
The four of you.
Yeah, the four of us, or the 10 of us. There are lots more women, and they need the support. I mean, people say that, asking all the time, gee, it's only a few women who ever get reviewed, and what about the other ones? So I ask the same question, what about the other ones? And where is the press? And why aren't they there? And where is the audience? And why aren't they there? I mean, I was so lucky because I started out when the audience was growing.
Yeah.
And I was growing, and now the audience is there. 4,000 strong in San Francisco alone.
Anything you want to end it up on?
No, I think there are enough end-up things.
Yeah.